You're listening to Podcast on Fire. It's Asian cinema in a podcast with your hosts, the magnificent trio of Stu, Ken, and Mike.
Hello, welcome to Podcast on Fire 47. I am not Stuart Sutherland. I am Blondie, aka Kenneth Olson. And we won't go into the reason why I'm hosting. I just am. So, with me, the usual host, Stuart Sutherland.
Hello.
And Mike Burnett.
Matt.
Therefore, the magnificent trio is gathered. So, not off to a rocky start at all. So, we'll just move on to last movies watched. And therefore, Stuart can get this one for a change first.
Damn, no use to this part. Luckily I've actually written out what I need to do. I usually write out what I need to talk about during you guys discussing last movies watched.
There you go.
Like a kid doing his homework on the, you know, the day being handed in.
He's doing his homework.
Mm-hmm.
Good on you, sir.
So last night I sat down and watched Ip Man, which, if I had to basically just put it down into a shell, I'd just say it was a fucking awesome movie.
Like, it's twice the fucking.
Yes.
Ah, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
Put that on the DVD cover in the UK.
Is that because Donnie gets topless?
Not once.
Oh.
So I actually looked at his face this time and realised he was acting, so I was like, whoa. It's not just the pecs, I do the work. Right.
So in a nutshell, story.
Donnie Yen plays this really timid yet proud family man who's highly skilled in Wing Chun. He starts off as like a rich man, but then the movie takes a darker turn when it goes into the period where Japan occupied China during the Second World War. So basically Donnie Yen's family, they all just become really poor. Jobs dry up, so Donnie Yen's basically shoveling coal. Man, why did I have to do all my notes in bullet points which didn't include the story?
And he sings that little tune, "Why Shoveling Coal?"
But it was basically giving you a deeper look into his character. It was just, like, he didn't have these limits. Like, he didn't feel shame to go from the greatest martial artist in Foshan to then work on the side everyone else in the coal pits. Like, everyone kind of turned around and went, "See, they're all a bit stunned to see him there." But like, for him, it was basically he was earning for his family. There's a couple occasions, obviously, with the movie taken and starting, well, being in two periods. It starts off, I think, in 1935, and then fast forward to 1942 when the occupation begins, and Donnie Yen's sort of challenged by this bandit played by Fan Tzu Wong. He basically comes in, whips everyone else's arse, and then it comes to Donnie, and you can tell what happens. You'll know who wins. But it's quite a shame because Fan Tzu Wong's character kind of really seemed out of place.
Really?
Mm-hmm, because...
Because I was about to ask, though, it sounded like it switched from a generally thorough biopic to, you know,
a kung fu film.
A desperate attempt to sort of make a kung fu film to satisfy commercially. I'm just basing that entirely on what you said, that mm-hmm. Maybe that holds some truth, but I don't know.
Like, before it took its dark turn, it basically did look like it was just being a kung fu film. Like, Fan Tzu Wong's character comes... It's basically from out of town, comes, challenges all the schools, beats down all the masters. Donnie Yen puts him to shame. Is it right? Is it, obviously, this is going to be a thing where he gets an advantage over Donnie. Donnie's going to have to, like, do some more training and kick his ass, something along those lines. But no, like, Japan invade and occupy China. So it's like it's only became this very dark history lesson. But
then again, all that might have happened in real life. I don't know anything about the real history of Ip Man. Mm-hmm. He might have been challenged before all of that happened. So, you know, mm-hmm. Shouldn't really question that.
That's the thing. I really do love this movie. It's definitely been one of the best films I've seen in absolute ages. But I have seen a lot of posts where people have talked about it being historically inaccurate.
Really?
And there's part of me that I really don't want to have a look on Wikipedia and see where the inaccuracies are, because that will probably just taint my love for this film.
Well, that happens all the time, really, with movies. Movies depicting war times or not, adaptations of books to movies, that always comes with inaccuracies and stuff they skip. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you're never going to... Not never, but there's just a whole host of examples where they do take liberties, and that's just movies. So, I mean, it's not like they, during 1945 wartime, and someone brings up an iPod.
It's
no strange things like that. So I'm with you on that one. I can definitely go with the flow, especially if I knew the history, I probably could let it go because it is a movie, and this is what movie producers do.
Mm-hmm. It depends on what liberties you take with historical accuracy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously, the filmmakers are interested in doing, making a good story, or telling a good story, not writing a history exam.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, in certain instances, certain films, you've got to be sensitive to how accurately you do portray stuff.
Especially during this time, you have the issue of China and Japan. Depending on where the movie's made, there's always going to be a side that said it happened this way, and a side that said it happened that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. China-Japan relationships are still fragile in that regard.
Yeah.
Well, that's one of the things that had kind of not put me off, but I didn't like the sound of, was supposedly the Japanese character or characters were supposed to be rather cartoonly evil and one-dimensional. Mm.
Yeah, probably every time you do see the character, they are being pretty evil, but I've never thought of the phrase cartoon evil, but that didn't come to mind when watching it, but it's more like evil bastards. It's when it comes to the action in this movie, some of it, obviously Sammo Hung was the action director for the movie, and it's actually just when it comes to this one fight scene, and I was basically physically flinching and just swearing at the TV, because it's got one of those fight scenes where it's just, you're going to have to rank that up as one of the best I've ever seen. It's a scene where Donnie Yen is enraged. I'll go back a little bit. With the Japanese obviously occupying China, and Donnie Yen working in the coal mines, Gordon Lam's character, who's a police captain, has now basically become some lackey for the Japanese, who rounds up other Chinese martial artists to practice against the Japanese army. And the general, he basically does this sort of like a tournament. If the Chinese win, they'll get a bag of rice for the family. And it gets to the point where there's a spoiler warning, so I'm not going to mention it. Something happens, Donnie Yen's enraged, and he challenges 10 of the fighters. And then goes on to one of the most vicious fight scenes I've ever seen in a film.
Sammo and Power coming together again.
Mm-hmm. It's just fucking, fucking bone-crunchingly crazy.
Or are you talking about the moves being brutal, or kind of, just the attitude?
It basically looks more like a UFC fight rather than...
It's a fight.
Mm-hmm. Donnie getting his hate on.
Yeah, because it just starts off with one guy trying to do a flying kick. Donnie grabs him by the leg, smacks him in the face, and when he falls to the ground, he basically just stomps on his jaw. And from that one shot, you're like, Jesus, because that didn't look fake. It can't be fake. That cunt just got fucking... His face just trampled. And the fucking speed Donnie Yen's throwing his fists at was like, from the looks of it, if there was undercrank, it was done amazingly well, because it just looked too natural. And fucking Donnie Yen looked like he was on fire when he was throwing those punches.
Clear looking too, and not the...
It is really clear. It's like, it's not a shaky camera, but he's constantly running his fists up the guy's chest and into his face and basically beating him down to the floor. I was basically watching it horrified, but fucking, oh, it's fucking cool.
I mean, you know sort of what to expect from kung fu cinema, and you've seen a whole lot even used to, and mm-hmm. if that took you by surprise, then I'm sure that it's not a reprisal of a fight move, a fight scene we've seen.
Yeah,
before.
But it's one of those things where people pull out one of their favorite fight scenes, like the dojo scene in Kiss of the Dragon. Like this is what people's going to mention as well when they see this film. Because basically, as soon as I finished watching it, went back to the chapters, rewatched the fight, and I still had the exact same effect as it did before. I was still physically flinching and going, "Oh fuck!" And all I do now is show my mates it, because I can nail react just like me. And the thing is, it's not just like the obviously the action's a fucking strong part of this movie, but the story's really good to it as well. It's got a strong surrounding cast. Simon Yam and Gordon Lamb. They also have the coolie from Kung Fu Hustle. That the mainland actor also had a role in Wilson Yip's last movie, Flashpoint. So to round this off, there's always a phrase I've coined when writing about Donnie Yen and Wilson Yip movies, calling it the Yip and Yen connection. And out of, this is their fourth one now, and this is definitely the strongest film that they've made.
And there's a fifth one coming, because it's not the end. The story of Ip Man has not ended.
Exactly. It was strange, because at the very end, it sort of done the History Channel bit, where it showed you old like photos of the real Ip Man, and how he went on to do this. He became the Grand Master. And the very last shot, it was him, and he also taught one of the greatest legends of all, Bruce Lee, and it's a photo of them together.
Because that's obviously something they... I think they're planning to cover that at least a little bit.
Yeah.
To have a Bruce Lee... I was about to say Bruce Lee copy, obviously, and after playing Bruce Lee, why not bring in the goalie from Shaolin Soccer?
Exactly, aye.
I read on the internet on... a website was that Bruce Lee will feature, but he'd be a child.
Right.
Obviously, it was long ago. It was in his youth. He was learning Wing Chun.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Mm-hmm.
So when he was an adult and late 60s, 70s, he didn't go to Ip Man for further studies, I guess.
Well,
created his own, didn't he? He created Jeet Kune Do.
Yeah. So.
I assume Donnie Yen still can't act for Toffee.
I thought he'd done quite well in it, but his character is very timid, so he doesn't really get passionate in the movie until the tournament scene. And after that, he basically just washes his hands of it. He goes back to his family as if it never happened. He just becomes this timid man again.
Seems right. Suited for his talents then, because emotional outbursts throughout the movie is not really Donnie's thing, so perhaps Wilson, you found a sort of, you know, this suits you, therefore we're going to focus on that.
Mm-hmm.
You can't act, so therefore we're going to focus on doing this instead.
Well, there was news this week of Wong Kar Wai's version of the Ip Man story in it, The Great Master.
Coming in 2020.
Which is going to feature the return of Bridget Lin.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And is that confirmed, really?
I don't know how confirmed it is, but, you know, it was on Twitch, and they seemed a pretty confident news story. Mm. Twitch is usually pretty good for news. And obviously, Learn to like what is supposed to be Ip Man.
I think it might cut out there.
I think know which way which is more likely to be the better drama anyway.
And Tony Leung, what's the actor he says to?
Oh, right. Cool.
I'm in no hurry to see this, by the way, but I will see it. It's just one of those movies that I don't need to go out to see it immediately. But, I will.
This might be the new Dragon Tiger Gate for me.
Well, not the same quality though, really.
I'm just going to have to watch them both in rotation.
Okay. Yeah, because you openly admitted that Dragon Tiger Gate is not a good film, but it's fun to watch.
Yeah.
In a nutshell. American samurais and stuff. Yeah, cool. Should we move on to Mike Bannon? If you haven't even watched the last movie.
that was an epic review. Well, technically, my last movie watched is sort of He Was Cool.
He was what?
He Was Cool.
Right.
A Korean film from a few years back. Romantic comedy about some annoying female students. It kind of has sort of a relationship with an annoying bully that is kind of like king of the neighborhood. Everything's his cool. And it's so far, it's unfunny and annoying. So after 45 minutes, I had to turn it off. I just couldn't take anymore.
45 out of 122?
It was draining my will to live. Yeah, 120 or something like that.
Fucking hell.
Korean movies just can't last. They can't edit themselves under 2 hours. They just can't do it.
Jesus Christ. Do they have a ego thing going on? We're great. Watch us for 2 hours because we're great.
It must be some kind of, you know, tax thing. You know, they get a tax break if their film's over 2 hours.
Yeah.
I mean, 45 minutes in and it's a light, pointless, meandering, annoying, boring romantic comedy, and I don't understand where the extra hour and 15 minutes is going to go. So I'm kind of fearing having to finish watching that. So instead of talking about that cack, I'm going to talk about a film I actually did finish recently, which is The Magic Blade.
Aye.
Shaw Brothers. 1976, starring T. Lung and Lo Li Kufeng, Fan Mei Sheng, who I mentioned in the last podcast, turns up in Cheng Li. It's a Shaw Yuan sword and Waita Wuxia film, but you know, double crossing, a billion and one characters, all that kind of stuff. Everything you expect from a Shaw Yuan film. Except this one just never gets going for me.
Really?
Yeah. Basically, Ti Lung's on his wedding day, his dad is killed. And possibly his wife to be as well, I can't remember that now. No, I think it's just his dad. And so he goes in search of the killer and stuff. And then obviously he meets like character after character on the way and gets into this kind of murder mystery thing, which ends up in a big fight. And there's some exotic weapons and all that kind of thing. Ti Lung has like a swiveling blade type weapon. It just never really. I just never felt it caught fire or got particularly exciting. The action in it is really disappointing, seeing as Tong Gai was one of the choreographers. Just really by the numbers, basic kind of what you'd expect from a average kind of indie film swordplay. Really disappointing in that aspect. I mean, Choi Yu film, so it still looks really nice, and there's some great costumes and sets in it. But yeah, I just haven't got a lot to say about it, to be honest. I'd read reviews and a lot of opinion from fans, and a lot of people seem to really dig it, but it just didn't. It didn't set me alight. It didn't get me all excited. Also, kind of like one of the betrayally plot twists is about as obvious as you could possibly ever get for a plot twist. I mean, you'd know if you watch it anyway. You'll understand who's going to be the sneaky double crosser in the first like 5 minutes, literally. And a point as well about the Image DVD. Is when I plonk that in, you know, when you put on a DVD and you get your little menu up, and then there's like footage from the film playing, little loops and stuff, little scenes and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Usually just a little montage of like people screaming and swinging swords around, that kind of thing. On the Image DVD, it was showing a big chunk of the final fight scene, including characters dying. which is really annoying.
That shows you how much they care.
It's very close to being hugely spoilerific. What, spoilerishness enough to annoy me? I mean, it wasn't given away like the end, but still. Come on, show, put something in there from the beginning of the film.
And that's usually only a 20 or 30 second loop, so you don't need to show much at all. You can cut really fast.
Yeah. Just, you know, people jumping out, explosions, a few of those looped over. Really annoying.
And have the Kung Fu fighting tune play over it, if you like. when you're inappropriate already, then might as well go all the way.
Yes, I think my overriding, considering the cast is like I mentioned before, Di Lung, Law Li, Ku Feng, fixed by Chor Yu and Tongai doing action, I think my one word summation of the movie would be disappointing.
I liked it. but you know, the details are really unclear to me now. I think I watched it when it came out on DVD, which might have been all the way back to 2002, 2003. So what I remember from it, I just dug the atmosphere of that one in particular, because it wasn't a wuxia, one of those colorful fantasy-like wuxia. It was a bit more atmospheric, a bit more rural in some cases, you know, the deserted towns, stuff like that. But also, I probably explained that very bad, but also I remember it was overall cool atmosphere and scenes like, you know, the human chess game that they had, which was really bizarre, but I remember responding favorably to that.
Yeah, it didn't do much for me.
And in just Dick Long as this rugged, bearded hero, and I don't know, I it didn't blow me away, but I just dug the overall atmosphere it provided me, and without, you know, the action probably didn't amaze me as such, but just you know, it established a few things correctly, and therefore I could ride along with that film. But there are better Chor Yun films out there, especially basically when he didn't fall into that, you know, assembly line movie making that he was part of, you know, making swordplay movie after swordplay movie after swordplay movie, all with Dick Long. You know, the earlier stuff is much better from Chor Yun. I mean, hello, Intimate Confessions of a Chinese Courtesan, which is probably, you know, I don't know, one of the best Shaw Brothers movies ever.
That's a top film.
Yeah, and The Bastard, great film, drama. And House of 72 Tenants is more of an important film than a really good film, because it was one of the few Cantonese language films at the time, beginning 70s. So I mean, just like Chang-Chi, my favorite era of Chor Yun's is you know, before 1975, basically.
Well, maybe it was a little bit of expectations, because I'm actually a fan of all of his swordplay type films, like Killer Clans and...
Yeah, Killer Clans is great.
Clan Feuds, Death Duel.
Oh, yeah, of course, Death Duel, that's amazing. That is latter 70s, so obviously there was some... switcheroo in the type of wuxia films he made.
Yeah.
I always mention Death Duel because it has one of the goriest scenes in Shaw Brothers movies I've ever seen. The surgery Derek Yee performs on himself.
Yeah.
It's just incredibly gory. You're just fucking digging into the meat and shoveling meat in and out. It's just, whoa! And it looks pretty good. You know, the effect looks pretty good. It's a great film, Death Duel. I agree with that.
Yes, so I think it was, you know, a bit of expectation, and obviously, you know, putting it on, knowing people loved it. I thought one of the problems with being on a forum, or be, you know, reading them and things like that, or reading reviews, is that you kind of get hyped up for certain films. When people go, you know, mention how great it is, and I start thinking, yeah, this is going to be awesome. Only to be unfortunately disappointed.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing that affects you whether you like it or not, I guess. Sometimes that follows me into a viewing, but sometimes, you know, when I press play, all that exists that has ever existed it's that movie in my unformed opinion. It sounds strange, even if it's a famous movie, but it kind of do switch off at times. But that's different from perhaps your experience with movies. That it's inevitable that things just stay with you.
Yeah. Also, on a side note, if you want to watch the film, but you can't spare 97 minutes, just watch the original theatrical trailer. It's only 3 minutes 46, but it pretty much condenses the whole film. So you won't need to watch it.
And Shaw Brothers usually cut some pretty good trailers in that regard, even though they did spoil a few things here and there. But I always like the Shaw Brothers trailers because like other trailers, of course, they painted words on screen like the most amazing experience this year and blah blah blah, and at times a bad grammar to go with that.
Yeah.
But Shaw Brothers were a little bit better than that because they were also quite famous for focusing on making translations for the movies that at least was had correct spelling. So they ran a pretty tight ship overall, actually.
Also, there are boobies in the trailer.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing Stu's gone quiet because he's rushed over to
I'm Googling.
Watch the trailer. Yeah.
I'm Googling. Hear me now. Right, well, you do that, Stu. You can choose to listen to me if you like, but I'm going to talk about my last movies watch. I watched The Sting. And no, not that The Sting, 1973, Paul Newman, Robert Redford film.
Good film, that.
Yeah, it's good. The Sting, directed by Nico Wong, starring Andy Lau, 1992, is pretty good as well. It's not a remake, actually. Fast-paced, hyperactive lunacy, basically. It's... Andy Lau plays Simon Tam, is a sort of a wealthy private detective of some sort. It's not really clear what is. He's some sort of something for hire. But he's sworn to his master that he's not going to take any jobs. But his agent and assistant, played by Simon Lui, an early appearance by Simon Lui, who went on to appear in every movie from like the end of 90s and a few years after that. Simon Lui was in every movie. Big or small role. So his agent accepts $1 million down payment to protect the client without Simon Tam knowing. But that client dies and leaves behind his wife, Yvonne, played by Rosamund Kwan. And subsequently the triads, who is led by Henry Fong and an actor called Michael Dinga, or Dinga, whatever. They want money and diamonds from the widow. So the hunt is on, and this all goes on while the CID officer, played by Bowie Lam, wants to take down Simon Tam. He's his sworn enemy. So it's a very lively comic book adventure in style, and this quite infrequent director, Nico Wong, he sort of lets us know that he feels the Sting has no business operating in the real world or within the notions of sense. So... But he has the skills to back this claim up, So as he takes the ultra awesome Simon Tam, as portrayed by Andy Lau, because he's never in danger, this character, and he's cool and never in danger. He always knows what's going on. So it's really a long chase movie. It's a long, very fun chase movie, and so one of those heroes. This character is just tailored for Andy Lau, and. Judging by the manic humor on display, it could have been a Stephen Chow vehicle of this era as well, because it's a kind of a cocky hero, which Stephen Chow played at times too. So who knows? Maybe they tried to cast Stephen Chow in this movie. Andy Lau also performs quite a bit of action in this, which again we come back to the fact that Andy Lau was good at selling fights and took part in fights. As much as he could, and there's a number of bizarre fights here. There's this encounter with an assassin that is right out of an old school flick. You encounter these assassins with bamboo hats over their face, basically. Yeah. Awesome. Never see them. So it's one of those fighters. I think that was Hung Yan Yan. It looked like Hung Yan Yan. But this fighter wants the diamonds, as everyone does in this movie. And it's bonus points goes to actually Bowie Lam, who plays the CID officer, who he tries to catch Simon Tam by disguising himself. So during the funeral of Rosamund Kwan's husband, he has disguised himself as Jesus on the cross. He's actually on the cross. But the fun thing is, you never see this during the scene until Simon Tam just casually and cool reveals that and pulls out the blanket from covering his nether regions. So and also he dresses up as a baby towards the end, a very ugly baby.
I was going to say, guessing from what you're saying and having a quick look at the DVD cover, and there's certain James Bondishness from it.
Yeah.
He allows pose with the gun and Rosamund Kwan around him. Are we talking kind of like a kind of light, popcorny movie like the early Bond films, something like that?
I don't know. I think the early Bond films were, compared to this, obviously this is Hong Kong though. Yeah. So I should say that probably they probably are, but I don't think the Bond films were as manic as this one. But they're coming from 1960s to 1992. Fast pace in the 1960s, fast pace, hyperactive pace, might have meant a James Bond movie, might have equaled a James Bond movie. So the answer is up in the air. I guess you have to watch it yourself to compare in that regard. But it's really one of those movies where you pick it up from the shelf. Oh, yeah, I bought this for Sting. Yeah, it's Andy Lau. Okay, I'll pop it in. And it surprises you. Because it's one of those movies that is above average run-of-the-mill assembly line movie making 1992. It's one of many, and it surprises in that regard, and it's genuinely fun and stuff like that, and not grating comedy as such. It's not Wong Jing-ish. And actually the movie Perfect Exchange with Andy Lau by Wong Jing was known as The Sting 2, but it has nothing to do with it aside from Andy Lau in the lead role. And that movie is more of a gambling movie / Prison on Fire parody, and it's actually quite fun too. But I won't talk about that. But Sting is actually very recommended, and there's a very good Universe DVD out there of it, hopefully still out there, and should be very, very, very cheap therefore. So I reckon no one out of you has seen that film.
No.
Nope. I've seen it, around on sites and stuff, but I've never actually taken much interest in it, to be honest.
Yeah, and it certainly doesn't scream out at you. And that cover doesn't really represent the film as such. But and Rosamund Kwan, by the way, I always liked her. She's incredibly beautiful, and she's game to take part in chase scenarios, but it's not like she's always, the damsel in distress. Help me, Andy, help me.
Tripping over in an opportune moment when running away from baddies.
Yeah. Oh, but by the way, there's a wonderful running theme. Let's see if I can explain this properly. Simon Tam, the character Andy Lau plays, he's everybody's sworn enemy. So whenever he gets out of a fix or in a situation, actually is the better, the more sly character, the more clever character in that situation, whenever he gets out, characters stand up, put their hands in the air and scream, "Simon Tam!" I don't know if I'm explaining that very well, but you've seen that sort of cap to a scene. "I'll get you!" "This is the last thing I do!" It's wonderful, actually, a little element that they brought in this film. So I think it's a film that the filmmakers focused on, actually. So, fun stuff. So, therefore, is that musical break?
It is indeed.
So tonight's question, I don't know who submitted this, sorry. You're
Tom.
Great. Sorry?
Tom.
Tom, you're great, Tom. Dragon Dynasty has recently released King Boxer and 36 Chambers of Shaolin in the UK, the Shaw Brothers movies. So have you any idea if they are planning any future Region 2 releases of their stuff? And what do you think of the prospect of their entire catalogue being released here, the Shaw Brothers catalogue, after the demise of Hong Kong Legends? Will they sell? Michael, since you are closer to that market than I am, for instance, UK market, what's your take on this?
Well, Kenneth, obviously reading the question, I decided to get in touch with some of my contacts in the business. And by contacts, I mean Google. And business, I mean HMB's website. And according to them, currently on pre-order for June the 8th is Come Drink With Me and My Young Auntie.
Again, Dragon Dynasty releases in the States.
Yep. Well, Dragon Dynasty have only released six Shaw Brothers films so far, which are 36 Chamber, King Boxer, which already released here, My Young Auntie, Come Drink With Me. I keep going to say Come Dine With Me, which is a title of a UK program about cooking. And Heroes of the East and One-Armed Swordsman.
Swordsman, yeah.
But the thing is, Come Drink With Me and My Young Auntie aren't listed on the BBFC site as being certified yet. And as far as I know, the PR company that deals with Momentum Shaw Brothers releases haven't got any information about those two films being released yet. And I haven't seen any reviews go up. And considering it's, what, May the 20th today?
That's right.
Upon recording, if they're going to be released in the next, like, 2 weeks or 3 weeks or so, they're leaving it a bit late to get all the PR stuff going. So I've got a feeling June the 8th is probably Cobblers. So I think Come Drink With Me and My Young Auntie will get released, but I don't know when. It's all down to sales. So, I mean, the Dragon Dynasty in the US did have, I don't know how long the rights are going to last for, a whole bunch of Shaw Brothers films. I think it was nearly 30.
Mm-hmm.
Around that mark. And only six have been released. Now, there's rumours going round that Five Deadly Venoms is going to be released in August this year. It's got some kind of listing on the DVD Aficionado website. But I haven't seen any official word on that. And I think it's basically down to sales have not been great.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, what was the company in the UK that a few years ago released some Shaw Brothers DVDs, about, I don't know, 10, but they listed more that never were released? Death Duel, Spiritual Box and stuff like that were released.
That was what? Momentum.
Yeah.
The company that are currently releasing the Dragon Dynasty ones.
Right.
Under their Momentum Asia banner.
And that sold.
Which died a grisly death.
Well. Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the thing was, though, is they released six with no English dubs. Artwork that I actually quite like, but most people think is disgusting. And at a price point of £20.
Wow.
Retail price.
Then you wait a few months and they're on the sales.
And
that's when the stew swiped in.
And they weren't like the special editions Dragon Dynasty are doing with some added stuff. These were bare bonus releases, these old ones.
Yeah, basically vanilla discs for £20. And to be totally honest, they've got 30 titles, 24 were listed in a little book that came with them to show what films they're going to release.
Mm-hmm. Even showed cover art.
Yeah, had all the cover art already done. And there were some cracking films in there. And yet they released Magnificent Trio, which is a really good film, but an early 60s swordplay with stagey makeup. Spiritual Boxer, which is a good film, but not exactly packed with action. I don't know, when they had, you know, they got some other classics like Legendary Weapons of China and stuff that they were going to release. I would have thought, you know, they'd hit them hard and fast with some of the biggies to get them off the ground rather than going with some of those. But, their choice.
It's just hard, it seems. I mean, it really is a gamble to to sell Asian cinema, Asian martial arts cinema in the UK and America. I mean, I guess the best place, knowing that there are many releases, is France. And I guess it's just a market there, because obviously it's not released by, you know, billionaires with money to spend. You know, it's obviously a market in France. And even Christophe Gans, or however you pronounce his name, director of Silent Hill, has had his independent or Hong Kong label that has, for many years, they have been releasing small films, remastered. I mean, they have been able to request materials and pay for these materials, because Hong Kong companies are notoriously hard to work with in terms of getting a good price, I guess. If Shaw Brothers has any chance, and they have been doing releases, and I think they still are, it's France.
Well, I think just the interest in the UK, and I don't really know about the US, but it seems that way, is that people just aren't really into old school kung fu in a big way. They're just not selling. I mean, in Britain, there's loads of Asian movies on the shelves in the world section and stuff like that, and tons of anime.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always a market for the new Asian films and action films.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the old stuff is just not selling.
It seems that way in America too now, because what Dragon Dynasty have been releasing are more new stuff. I mean, one of the latest, I guess, was Protégé.
Mm-hmm.
They focused on some modern stuff, and how to sell them to the public. A gun on the cover.
Mm-hmm. Fire backgrounds, four shotguns.
Yeah, but by the way, that doesn't bother me, but I find it amusing to look at. By the way, I don't remember Daniel holding a gun in that story.
Me either.
Oh well. Does he ever have a gun in the movie?
Well, saying that, I'm trying to think about, I've not watched PTU in a while, but when was the last time Simon Yam held dual pistols in that movie?
And an exploding helicopter would be way too hyperactive for that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Then again, sell it any way you like. Don't make any alterations on the film.
Mm-hmm. I actually remember when it was actually an edit on a cover of Hong Kong Legends when they released Heart of the Dragon. It's the shot of Jackie pressed up against the wall holding his gun, but they actually photoshopped it and put in a bigger gun.
Bigger.
Mm-hmm.
See, my attitude would be, if the film's not interesting enough to sell, you know, you're too afraid to actually show the film itself on the cover, so you have to fake it, then why are you releasing the film in the first place? If they think that, you know, Protégé being a kind of a drama with Andy Lau with grey hair and all that obviously isn't interesting enough to grab people, then why are they releasing it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, why are you releasing PTU if you've got to get a cover with faked explosions and all kinds of crap on it? Buy a film that's got all the big explosions and crap in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's either that, you know, it's a good question, but it's either that they prepaid some movies and they are stuck with, you know, we gotta release this somehow and market it somehow, so let's just do it the old-fashioned way. Mm-hmm. Guns, explosions and sex.
Yeah, change the title, add some guns to it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, whatever.
Okay, so in answer to that question, Shaw Brothers films, it looks like we're gonna get at least two of the six that DD released, but can't be sure about that or when. As for expanding it to all the Dragon Dynasty releases, most of them have already been released in the UK anyway.
Exactly. I think Cinevasia.
Cinevasia's doing most of it.
They've tapped most of the new ones for themselves.
And some of the older ones, Tartan, already released.
Mm-hmm.
I think, like, Hard Boiled. Is that a Tartan release?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the Internal Affairs trilogy?
Yep.
Yeah. Now, I've got a list.
Has that reached UK shows?
No, Dog Bite Dog hasn't got UK release. I've got a list of the films that haven't been released here. We've got Righting Wrongs, which, although it's an awesome, awesome film, I don't see getting released here. I don't see, maybe it will, but I just don't see there being, you know, it's not like a Jackie Chan film or something like that they can
mm-hmm.
sell it as. Dragon Squad, which is shit.
Put Maggie Q on the cover, then it can be released here.
Yeah, you might get a bit. Yeah. I think they'd have to be a bit stoned to try and release that, though.
The Maggie Q in a cat suit with Photoshop guns.
Yeah.
Yep. So. Yeah. Or, yeah, with her tits out, holding a pair of tits.
From the star of Live Free or Die Hard.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It'll look like some sort of opening sequence for a James Bond movie.
Yeah. I can totally see that being released.
But. Yeah, it could be released, but it's crap. Bite Dog, which I don't know if that'll get released. I wouldn't have thought so.
Once again,
good film though.
Yeah, I would imagine one of those labels that you mentioned would probably be more prone to release that because it can venture off into art house territory. Per definition, outside of Hong Kong, you know, it's not an art film, but it's not a mainstream film either. So it'll be a good fit for Tartan or CineAsia.
I'm going to say it, but I'm going to refuse to say it ever again. Robin B. Hood, right? It's Rob B. Hood. I don't know why they actually had IN in there.
Because they thought the Hong Kong people put forth their bad grammar again.
Well, Robbie Hood, I'm surprised it hasn't got a release actually in the UK yet, because that's a Jackie Chan film.
Mm-hmm.
It's a poo Jackie Chan film, but it's a Jackie Chan film nonetheless.
And a family film, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not a high rating in America or Hong Kong.
Yeah, probably get a 12 over here, I would have thought, something like that.
Possible. It kind of looked like something that Contender could have released with like one of their last gasps. They would release that and then the single disc edition on the same day.
Yeah. Well, I think CineAsia are releasing The Myth, the Jackie Chan film.
It's already in stores, yeah. I saw it at the weekend.
Oh, with like a super duper ultimate mega super duper edition?
As far as I know, I just had two discs.
No, is it?
I picked up the case and I'm like, I think there are two discs in here.
It's a very uneven film, but some bits are good. So I wouldn't be surprised if CineAsia get round to releasing Robbie Hood as well.
Mm-hmm.
So they are still active, the people were talking about the CineAsia?
Yeah, they're doing quite well at the moment. Well,
yeah, CineAsia are kind of responsible for all the modern Hong Kong films that come out over here at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Like,
they released Flashpoint and Sha Po Lang did they release it as SPL? They've released it,
wait,
right?
No, they haven't.
Have they not?
No, they released Flashpoint.
Flashpoint's definitely out.
Yeah, they've done that one, but I don't think they've done SPL yet.
I thought they had. They released Dragon Tiger Gate.
Yep.
They released Chocolate, the Thai film.
What was the one with Donnie and Kelly Chen? Was it Empress and the Warrior?
Yeah,
that's out. A couple Korean films as well.
They're kind of in charge of all the modern kind of Hong Kong stuff. They're releasing Ip Man later this year on DVD over here. And obviously they're doing The Myth and Tokyo Gore Police. Hey.
Apparently doing well enough as a label.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're rolling along.
And the only other one I noticed that's picking up steam nowadays is Metrodome. Because they've released The Warlords, Blood Brothers...
Right, yeah.
The other one, Battle of Wits. They've been putting them out quite regularly. And they're also... I think they've already released The Chaser. Or is that getting released?
I don't think that's out yet, but yeah, I think it is coming.
Mm. So they're picking up steam for more modern films as well.
And even going Blu-ray on some Hong Kong DVDs, which we won't see for the Shaw Brothers stuff. Because, you know, that's even more of a cost, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, Blu-ray of recent stuff that, you know... shouldn't be a problem to ship some units of that.
Yeah.
But yeah, they've knocked out some Korean films on Blu-ray as well, CineAsia, because I've got Chocolate and Guard Post.
Yeah.
On Blu-ray. So I believe CineAsia, I could be wrong here, but a few of the staff or the people who founded it used to work for Hong Kong Legends. Anyway, back to Dragon Deceit. We've got The Royal Tramp 1 and 2. Stephen Chow film.
I forgot I own those.
it'd be awesome if it came out, but there isn't really any Stephen Chow out over it apart from King of Beggars and Kung Fu Hustle and Shaolin Soccer.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and obviously there was the Shaolin Idiot.
Oh, no.
Which was Lookout Officer.
That's right.
But, yeah, there hasn't, I mean, King of Comedy, God of Cookery, Fight Back to School, any of his other big films haven't seen the light of day over here, so...
I can't even tell if CJ7's even came out here. I mind the UK...
CJ7 is, yeah.
Yeah, I mind the UK release fucking just didn't happen. Like, in the cinema, I was meaning.
Yeah, kind of. Came and went. Mm-hmm. So Raw Tramp might do, but I wouldn't have thought so.
Yeah.
Invisible Target.
Who could resist a movie which has the, at least in the original subtitles, I think it's Royal Trump 1, the subtitles go in one scene, tits attack, which is a stance. it's a stance that Stephen Chow performs. And the only way I know that, because I haven't seen Royal Trump, is that they feature that clip in Perfect Exchange, Wong Jing movie. They bring up Royal Trump on a computer and it suggests, try this while fighting Johnny Wang. They perform that attack. It fails. But the tits attack.
That's awesome. Sick. Yeah, so Invisible Target, which I can see getting a release. That's the Nick Zair film, isn't it?
Yeah.
Big Hong Kong action thing, so I'd expect Cine Asia or Metrodome to have a crack at that one.
Mm-hmm.
And The Rebel.
Yeah, I don't see that.
Johnny
one.
Nguyen film, isn't it? I might get a release. I don't think so, though.
Oh, I've heard it's a good film, but unless they could probably Photoshop the guy's head onto a Tony Jaa type body or some shite like that, they'll probably not find a decent selling point for it. I was actually surprised when they went for that one themselves, because I'd never heard of it until they chose to release it.
Well, I think, isn't Bay or a little bit tight with Johnny? As in, know each other, chummy.
Yeah, sure.
I could be wrong about that, but I think they are. They're homeboys. They roll together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the terminology.
Yeah, getting down with the kids. For the youth that listen to the show.
Kids they follow each other scene. On Twitter.
Yeah, there you go. That's the ultimate. That's the ultimate sign of being hip these days.
Twitter. Yeah, so there's only about, 8 films? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 films.
Oh, well, there's the new ones. The Jet Li's, The Enforcer's been released. Tai Chi Master.
It's already got the Dimension. I saw those, but they've already got the Dimension releases over here, and I'm not sure if they've got the UK rights to those ones.
I thought they would have maybe expired by now, I think. Because that was the same case for them in America, was it not? The same company?
Yeah, it was the same company, but I don't know if the Weinsteins would have bought UK and US rights to those movies or not.
They might be on the verge of becoming, because they're not in stores anymore. So...
Right, yeah, okay. So Fist of Legend, maybe, and The Enforcer, My Father is a Hero, might make their way over here, and Fong Sai Yuk.
Which I guess
mainly
is
because they're Jet Li, aren't they?
Yeah.
Fong Sai Yuk is, I guess, the newest DVD from Dragon Dynasty, or about to be released.
Yeah,
it's the one they're advertising.
As the legend, but I think it's... already known, or they've guessed based on the not the track record, but based on what Dimension has, it's going to be the cut version, albeit in Cantonese, because they trimmed a few minutes out of the original version when releasing Fong Sai Yuk as the Legend a few years ago on DVD. So that's the material Dimension works with. So if that ever ends up on UK shores, that's probably going to be the same edit as well.
Yeah,
which is kind of a thing that the big debate on forums, why aren't the Dimension and Dragon Dynasty or whatever doing this and this and this. It's a cost thing again, as you touched upon, Mike. It's they work with what they have, and the costs can't cover making a new print and stuff like that. So
Well, how much is missing? I mean, usually when people go on about cut films, there's like about 5 minutes or something.
I read 10 minutes for that one, but I can't confirm it myself. I have there was a good website open for many years called like the Web Alliance for Respectful Treatment of Hong Kong Films, short for. It's not open yet, but anymore. But it had listings of various films that were cut, including like Super Cop, Police Story 3, which again. The edit that was on Dragon Dynasty was the DVD, was the shortened American edit, but there was a Cantonese track available to it.
Mm.
So I think that was cut like 10, 12 minutes, maybe 20.
Interesting.
So, I mean, they work with the materials that they have, and that's just the truth nowadays for Dragon Dynasty. They can't turn to Hong Kong and get a good deal, apparently. For a new print and stuff like that, even though there is a remastered print available of Police Story 3, apparently it's too expensive to get that. So they, from a financial economical point of view, they do what they do, and that's just the truth nowadays. You can bitch and moan about it, and you can put forth a constructive opinion about what they should have done, but apparently it is a sad truth in a way, and you're just gonna have to accept that. Unfortunately, and that going back to the question, that should affect the UK releases as well, if they continue to port them over, including My Young Auntie, which only had a Mandarin track on its US DVD,
mm-hmm.
which is not a preferable solution if you know the film and the kind of film it is and from what era it is from. It's a Cantonese track for that is more preferable, at least for me. You should have dual tracks, really. But, you know, it is what it is. It's not going to be a recall.
Mm-hmm.
Although that's something that might change on the Momentum one, if you're lucky, because it can't be too difficult to get hold of a Canto track and add it on.
Because
that's all they'd have to do, isn't it?
One wonders if they have that, if they have that, well, obviously they can ask, but if they have that financial, you know, if they have money to do that. Because if you're going to request something that Dragon Dynasty didn't, then that means an additional cost for Momentum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But the thing is, I don't understand, on the My Young Auntie point, of how they would have, when they bought the film off Celestial, just being given, they got the English dub track, which seems to be hard enough to get hold of, on its own, and then they've been given Mandarin, but not the Canto. That seems a bit weird. I would have thought it would have been more likely that they got the Canto but didn't include it on the disc.
Yeah, that might be true too. So
that would be easier to fix for Momentum.
Mm-hmm.
If Momentum are even doing anything to the discs,
mm-hmm.
you know, they might just be buying them in, repackaging them and selling them and distributing them over here.
Yeah.
And not actually touching the content.
Yeah, they also finished products already, including extra features, the commentary tracks and stuff like that. That's finished.
And what you've always remember with DVD releases is that it's all about making money for the company that's releasing them. Right? If there's a film and it's cut by like 2 minutes, then they're probably going to look at it as in, are those extra 2 minutes going to make us more money when we release it? Probably not. So it's not worth releasing an uncut version. But then if it's a longer version, like 5-10 minutes or more, then like you said, Ken, it might be a case of having to renegotiate and pay more money to get a longer version from the original license holder. Or if you were working from negatives of stuff, like Dimension probably were, and remastering them themselves, then you'd have to go back to the negatives or any material and remaster it. And is it worth all the time, effort and money it takes to do that for an extra 5-10 minutes?
Then you're all of a sudden a specialist label, you know what I mean? You're going back to France again. The label I talked about, the HK Video, that's what they're doing and that's what they can afford to do.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe at times renegotiate, you know, if they ever were sent faulty material, they could probably, you know, say, hey, we want the right material. Okay.
Yeah.
You have the money?
Yeah,
we do.
They're kind of starting from scratch, aren't they? What would Dragon Dynasty would be doing is getting the print already done from Dimension.
Yeah.
And so they wouldn't have to do any work on it. It'd just be a case of getting it and then adding the audio tracks.
Yeah.
Whereas now they'd actually have to go through the whole effort of getting stuff remastered. I'm just guessing they would say that it wasn't worth it.
Yeah. As I said, it's not. This UK label is not a specialist label. I mean, they're not Hong Kong legends. They're only focused on Hong Kong movies.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, and the remastering process and all of that stuff. So probably not room for to include. Include this extra effort. But,
Also, if Hong Kong Legends started today, there's no way they'd be doing it like they did back then. Yeah. Because it cost them tons of money.
Yeah.
And diminished the amount of profit they could make. They only did it because there wasn't remastered versions around.
Yeah, they came out during a pretty good time for that kind of stuff. Beginning of, was it like 2001, 2000? About that.
Hong Kong Legends?
Yeah, the first releases.
Yeah, something around there.
So, I mean, there certainly was a good timing on their behalf. But mm-hmm. that petered out after a few years. Big time.
Yeah.
The thing is now, the releases in Hong Kong and Asia, the picture quality and everything, are usually pretty good. And so a lot of fans and stuff, how connected everybody is and how easy it is to shop online, it's far easier just to nab stuff from abroad than waiting for a UK release or a US release to come.
Yeah, I find myself doing that quite a lot.
Well, you know, you've watched It Man already, so you can either get a Hong Kong release which has been out for months, as far as I'm aware, it's going to be a good disc, right?
Yeah.
Good subtitles and everything, good presentation and that.
Mm-hmm.
Or do you want to wait another 8 months or whatever it is for a UK release?
Mm-hmm.
Not
and now,
worth it, is it?
So, speaking of, if we go into the special features aspect of it all, Hong Kong companies are becoming way better at that stuff. Both doing them and subtitling them into English. And I think Ip Man is from a company that does that, these big movies. And I think the Ip Man supplements are subtitled in English. So, you can't get the good edition. If you want that kind of stuff as well, then all bases are covered anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like you're going to get the extra interviews that and commentary tracks that Hong Kong Legends only could source. And it's not really worth the wait anymore in that regard either. So Hong Kong is getting better for new movies. Old movies, not so much.
Yeah. It would actually be good to come back to this question at the end of the year and see which of these companies have actually put forth.
Who's still alive?
See if Momentum actually do go on to release a more Dragon Dynasty, or if these two, the ones that are released already, are going to be the next one we find in the bargain bins. So,
along with full screen versions of IFD movies for like £1. So the plugging for this week, I'm gonna continue a theme from last week and plug a DVD release. Again, it's actually a German release, but there is a cheap alternative out there, which I wouldn't mention. But I'll plug the German DVD release of Swordsman in Double Flag Town, which is also known as Swordsmen in Double Flag Town or Killer in Double Flag Town, which is a mainland Chinese swordplay movie, which is quite different. It's a very, very slow mainland swordplay movie. As some reviews said, there has a natural, quiet atmosphere without the earth-shaking action sequences of Hollywood or Hong Kong cinemas. It's nothing like the Hong Kong wheelchair movies, but it's probably more authentic and realistic than anything Hong Kong ever made. It's barely any dialogue in the film, actually, and the action. It's more about build-up than extended fights. I think fights last for like a few seconds when they do occur. And it's set in a poor town, a rundown town, so it's very village-bound. It's not a colorful swordplay movie. And I really dig this movie. And it's out in Germany under the title of Lost Town. It also has a German title. If you look up Lost Town on Amazon.de, or I'll make sure we post that link on the podcast post, you'll find this movie. And it's a good DVD. It has a good anamorphic transfer, original Mandarin sound, and English subtitles. But there's also, or at least was, a cheaper alternative released in the mainland under one of those titles, Swordsman in Double Flag Town or Killer in Double Flag Town, which is, again, bound to be cheaper, probably not look as good. But if you just want to watch the movie, I'm sure it's it's good enough. And it's from the director of Warriors of Heaven and Earth, which was a movie I couldn't finish. I just thought that was the most boring shit that I've seen.
I think I did turn that one off early as well.
Yeah, I mean, and I expected this from the director He Ping to make a slow movie. He also made a movie called Sun Valley, which is in the same vein as Swordsman in Double Flag Town, has a bit more violence, a bit more like Choi Hak's The Blade in that regard. But Warriors of Heaven and Earth just seemed like the wrong territory for director He Ping, despite it being quite similar in a way. But I couldn't really stand that film. But it's probably his most widely distributed film, because it's made with Columbia TriStar Sony Pictures money, so it's on DVD pretty much everywhere. But this is my plug-in recommendation, kind of underrated film segment in one. So Michael?
I'm just going to simply plug www.fareastfilms.com. That's it.
Yeah. Have you done any reviews that people might want to look up? Any recent reviews from you?
No.
You're not doing anything.
No. A couple of interviews on there. And I did with a guy who organised a Taiwanese Film Festival, and with Toby Russell. And I've got, coming up in the next couple of weeks, will be my review of What Price Honesty.
Nice.
The awesome Shaw Brothers film.
Stuff in the pipeline.
Yeah.
See, if I had to think of Fari's films as some sort of like green room, you would more likely be the guy who would just lie on the couch for whenever you're there.
What?
Like when it comes to stuff, you're like, what's it, Brad Pitt in True Romance?
He's the stoner.
Yeah, he's just the guy that's on the couch doing nothing.
Yeah, don't come into my podcast and disrespect me.
Is it out now? Nobody doing anything.
That was a sort of paraphrase quote from True Romance.
Yeah, fuck, don't condescend me, man. I'll fucking have you killed. I know that movie in and out now.
Yeah, well, fuck you, Stu.
So on to Stu's plug-in then, on that note.
Okay, well, with Stu maintaining trying to keep hip with the youngsters, I started a Twitter account today for Podcast on Fire. Okay, I wasn't expecting any reaction, but still.
Woo!
So, yes, as of today, May 20th, it's visible on our homepage. It's on the sidebar. So if you enjoy tweeting, feel free to follow us. Just go for it. Yep.
Yeah. So. Hip kids lingo.
Mm-hmm. But if you want to actually find the page, it's www.twitter.com/podcastonfire.
So, right, so tune in next time for an update on the band list. Therefore,
yes.
So keep the excitement going. But
yeah, that's anyway. Great. Hey, wait a minute. How did you get hold of it, man?
Uh-oh.
Did you read? I told you there must have been a topic on the forum where I done my last buy, where I basically bought a dozen films, pre-ordered.
So how did they not get on the band list then?
They are!
So you said there's no band list?
Not this week.
Aye, not a segment this week, because I only watched one fucking film.
It Man.
Aye.
Yeah. Oh, there we have the segment. We have the segment done.
Yay. Aye, just visit the page.
You didn't mention that in your review.
Aye,
you didn't strike it off.
So? That would have been kept for the band list segment.
Right.
And I thought I hadn't done enough, so I said, right, well, we'll leave that for next time. When I come back and say, yes, I've watched 5.
So you're not even thinking of the hordes of people who come to POF just to know how Stu's band list are going? What about them?
Just visit the fucking band list page. podcastandfire.com/banlist.html. It's up to fucking date the new, because I re-established our website like an hour before coming on to do this show.
The way you talk to your fan base, Stuart.
I'm talking to you, Michael Banner. You.
Yeah, but I'm thinking of the fans here, Stu.
Hi, fan base. Hi. Love you.
They lost respect.
This it. Actually. Come on, this it. It's nice. And Michael, this it! You know, change of tones. I can see the subtleties in that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so, we have more fighting to do after the show, so we'll just sign off now. I've been your host for this week, Kenneth Olson.
Stuart Sutherland.
Yep.
Bye.
You got recognised, Banner.
Recognise what?
The fact that you don't visit this site enough.
Saying I'm a lazy bum who just sits around on a sofa.
Exactly.
Far East film manners. You know, you're doing your band segment. That's like, you know, the essence of Stu.
Hey, Mike.
Band segment.
Mike.
You know,
Mike.
It's your time to shine, that is, Stu.
Mike.